Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. This is Rebecca and I'm pleased today to be joined by Penny, who's going to be talking with us a little bit about the monastery garden. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hey. Great to talk with you about the exciting things that are coming up in the garden and have been happening in the garden lately. So do you want to just jump in and tell us some of the things that you're most excited about and that have been going on?
Well, one of the things that's exciting is that we have yet another wonderful, huge water tank that you all pushed and shoved into place, and that gives us another 5,000 gallons of water that we're collecting. And, you know, every gallon that we collect makes it possible to have a more abundant courtyard and a more abundant garden. And so, so water, you know, water is just so crucial. That's funny because I'm sitting here watching it rain.
Yeah.
And as you know, we've had sort of storm after storm after storm. And so it seems funny to be talking about lack of water at the moment, but we know what summers are like.
And yes.
All this rain won't stop, and it'll stop for 6 or 7 months. And so to have that backup of thousands of gallons of water makes so much difference.
Yes, it so does. I know in the midst of February, we think, well, maybe it'll never stop raining, but we do know it will, and it'll be months and months of that just dry, hot weather. And we're planning ahead, making provisions, and we've got. Would you give a little context to people that? So how many gallons can we save now? And how does that work? You know, like how does that work to support the garden?
Well, the rain is collected off the roof of the main building, and then it's pumped to the various tanks from the tank that collects it. And a number of years ago, we kind of looked at what would be possible to collect if we actually collected from almost all the buildings, and it was something like 35,000 gallons, even in a bad year.
Even in a
droughty winter. So so the amount of rain actually is more than adequate to give us lots of water, and the issue, of course, is storage. And so the monastery has made this commitment, and Sangha has been generous enough to support it, to provide storage tanks that now I think we're up to 15,000 gallons of storage. And before that, we had to do things like, for a long time we were drawing from the pump, the well that the monastery has. But the decision was made a number of years ago that we don't know that that well will be adequate for the garden and for all the human needs we have, especially with retreats. So the garden was cut off the well. And so we really have been sort of dependent upon saved water. And I remember before we had the tanks, we had, you know, every time there was a rain there all along the roof line, there'd be trash cans and waste baskets and anything we could collect water in. And then we would haul it into the garden and hand water all the beds. And now we have, you know, a tank in the garden, and we have a pump, and we can water with hoses. And, I mean, it has made a world of difference because it used to be in the summer about all you would do in a work period is just water.
Yeah, it is such a beautiful evolution. And I've heard you use the phrase, we're really living within our means, our water means. So you take that into account when you're suggesting what's planted and what we can save and what we can water. And it just feels, I don't know, just for me, it feels like such a kind and sustainable way to live. I just feel like it's being really good stewards of the resources.
Well, we are living within our means, and the thing that's exciting about the tanks is that they have extended our means. Our means, in terms of the amount of water that is potentially available, are large, but we have to find a way to store it, and so that's what's made the difference. So our means now are 15,000 gallons of water, greater than the means were about 5 years ago. And it's fun because it part of what I love about it is that to me, Zen is all about abundance, how we find abundance and get out of the mindset that we live in deprivation.
Uh-huh.
And so this is like a physical manifestation of that. I mean, it'd be easy to go around, you know, kind of walking around with our knuckles dragging on the ground, bemoaning drought. But instead, we've realized we actually have lots of water. So how can we live abundantly with that water? And the way we can live abundantly with that water is to save it.
Wow, that is such a good point. Because, you know, it would be so easy and by some perspective, obvious to say, well, no, we're in a drought. We need to cut back. We need to not plant. We need to, you know, do all these things that are kind of a shrinking back. But what you realized and pointed out and what we've been acting on is actually there's plenty of water. It's landing on our roof during the wet season. And if we can find ways to build the gutters and save it and store it, then there actually is no lack, and we can just deal with. And it's not being optimistic; it's being realistic. You know, it's really what is actually happening, not, you know. And
yeah.
I just think that is such a you know, kind of a, what we're going for is living in what is actually so and responding as the moment seems to, you know, to lead us.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we're doing, so we have plenty of water now for the garden, for at least a small garden in the
mm-hmm.
summer. And so it's still very, very hot in the summer. And in the garden at the top of the, you know, it's kind of at the top of the hill as you drive in. It's right near the parking lot, and it just sits in the sun. And so we've been moving more and more beds under the trees. There are a few
mm-hmm.
trees and wonderful oak trees in the garden to try to provide
mm-hmm.
them with shade in the summer.
And
the other thing is that when the monks first moved there, they built a garden that went all the way down the hillside that is south of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive into the parking lot, it would be on your left. And there's
mm-hmm.
this hillside, and then we took that garden down because the monastery years ago chose to put a new garden up where we are because it's closer to the kitchen. It makes sense. But
mm-hmm.
looking at that hillside, we realized, oh, my gosh, it faces away from summer sun, and it faces into winter sun, and toward the bottom of that hill, because water percolates downhill, it's probably going to stay moist a lot longer than that poor baking garden, you know, up at the top of the hill. So in addition to trying to move more of the plants under trees, we're going to experiment this spring and summer with resurrecting some of the beds down toward the bottom of that hillside and see if we can take advantage of the slant of the hillside and the capacity of that hillside to retain water longer, and see if we can get some things growing down there
mm-hmm.
that won't be so baked and parched in the sun. So it's a new experiment, and we'll see what happens, but it's really fun to think about and to plan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is so fun, and it's so intelligent. You know, that's the word that just keeps dropping in for me as you're talking. It's just so intelligent, you know? We have a really nice garden, nice winter garden, winter lettuces and lots of different things that grow, and with the way that the garden is facing and the way that the new plants are, it's going to mitigate the summer heat and just take full advantage of what nature has, you know, has for us. And so,
yeah.
and that's not even counting the swales and the everything, all of the other ways that you've introduced to us in terms of saving the water that is in the ground. And it's just a beautiful, intelligent system, compassionate system.
Well, and it's part of that living within our means. I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a way of looking around and saying, well, what are our means? You know, what is this piece mm-hmm. of land that we live on, and how do we live with it in as creative and abundant and grateful a way as possible?
Yeah.
And so it seems like coming to it with those eyes, which is how we have been doing that, new possibilities come up all the time.
Yeah. Oh, it is such a beautiful expression of practice, and it's such a wonderful way for us to practice that you know, quality of that you're describing of just pay attention, notice what's so, and then how are we, what's the best way to use what we've got in that whole spirit of abundance. So.
I know we're running out of time, but there was a Peace quote recently about, you know, we tend to think about things we desire, but it's fun to think about what if they desire us? Like, you know, I desire this cup of tea, but what if this cup of tea desires me, you know, to drink it? And it's fun to look at our property that way. Now, what would we like or what would we want, but what does it desire from us in terms of response? And that feels like a really, really creative place of pretty much limitless energy to interact with the environment that supports us.
Oh yes, that is such a good way of saying it, limitless, because it really is such a kind and compassionate way of being with our property, the land, and ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Penny. And we are up against the clock. But is there anything else you would want to add before we say goodbye?
No, just feeling very grateful to be in the garden and to talk about the garden and to share the garden with you all.
Oh, I tell you, I feel the same way. I love my time in the garden that I get to be in there as practice, and everyone else that ever comes on retreat and gets to come and work in the garden. I know it's just such a gift. So thank you for everything that you do to make it possible, and we just are very grateful, lucky people, aren't we?
We are indeed. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Penny.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Penny, and thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. So it sounds like it's raining out there, the monastery.
I don't know, actually. I'm not there, but maybe so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
yes.
Exciting. And
it's I believe our tanks are pretty much full. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting. That's exciting.
It is. Yes, and it's so wonderful to that last thing that Rebecca and Penny were talking about, where there is no separation, right? That place of listening for life to say what life wants. So embodied in the property, if we listen, the property will tell us what it wants. And then we as stewards have the opportunity to have life work through us to respond to it. It's a technical term in biology, I believe, but it's called reciprocal symbiosity, where there's a mutual movement between the two. I just thought that was lovely.
Oh, wow. Wow, reciprocal symbiosity. Wow.
Yes.
Sounds like a great way to approach life.
Isn't it? It's the only way. It underlines our interconnectedness.
Yes, exactly. And I have announcements here, unless you want to start in another place, Ashwini?
No, that's wonderful. I think we have lots of exciting opportunities to support each other.
Yes, we do. Some of them coming up very soon. And that is that our year-long retreat on making a change for good will train us to look at a conditioned process from the vantage point of awareness in different areas, finances, health, relationships, etc. By looking at conditioned mind instead of through conditioned mind, we can become clear about how not to believe the conversations that so often sabotage our best intentions.
Mm-hmm. You know, Michael, if that's coming up. We start our first radio show on Monday, this Monday. Isn't it amazing? And that description doesn't even begin to point to what a wonderful time we're going to be having.
Yes, it's just a couple sentences here, but it is huge, and it's daily, and it's really supportive. Bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on March 23rd. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. The Family Karma Retreat with Sherry and you, Ashwini, will help participants see how the, quote, story of me, unquote, was created as karma and conditioning collided in family, and how this, quote, notion of self, unquote, unconsciously operates. The retreat, April 15th through 20th in North Carolina, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with Sherry. Step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up at the Your Practice Retreat, May 4th through 11th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California. The retreat offers individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for the week. And a new interview with Sherry and Ashwini has been posted on Sherry's website, sherryhuber.com. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, you can press star 6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes on one topic is really helpful. Okay, Ashwini, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? First caller, are you there?
This is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Hello. Oh, good. My earbuds weren't working. I'm calling in. I just got done with the Socratic email class, so this is a advertisement, a thank you, and a bit of a continuation. I had picked to focus on with you around not waking up in the middle of the night, not being able to get back to sleep, and through the class. The biggest part was just focusing on one thing, and I kept thinking of Sherry used to say, her teacher always said, nothing survives under scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And as this, yeah, I was just, I found myself quoting that all the time. I think people were ready to smack me after a while. But, yeah, as the weeks went by, I can't say the problem, in quotes, problem's gone away, it's better. But how I relate to it and how I see it, and the stories about it and the meaning and the labels have really diminished, and that has lessened the suffering around it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and that's such a beautiful way of articulating and practice, right, Susan? We
mm-hmm.
Something is a problem, right, because we're looking
right.
at it as what. And our relationship to it is through conditioned mind, which always sees it as something wrong. And then we're
right.
encouraged not to look at the problem, which is the inability to go back to sleep, but to look
uh-huh.
at the process of conditioning. And when we start to look at conditioning, we start to see that the suffering is caused using that what as content. And
mm-hmm.
as we see that, our relationship to what changes, because we're looking at it not through conditioned mind, which sees it as a problem, but we're relating to it completely differently. And so even though the problem hasn't gone away, that's not the
mm-hmm.
point. The suffering has diminished, which is the point of looking at it in the first place.
Yeah, and it was like part of the email class, I realized it was of constantly going up into my head to try to figure it out. And I've
mm-hmm.
not figured it out anymore, but I have observed, I have paid attention, I've stayed with the sensations. So my understanding has increased, though it wasn't from thinking about it or figuring it out. It's a different
misunderstanding.
Yes,
that's another such a brilliant observation of exactly what happens when we bring awareness to a situation, right? So you watch the process of figuring it out, which doesn't result in anything. It doesn't resolve the problem. But bringing awareness to the process that creates suffering actually allows us to have some understanding, of some compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, right? It's a completely different process. And so I think what you're pointing us to, right, Susan, is that we're not here to create and attend to beliefs. We're here to pay attention. And that when we pay attention, we can bring whatever causes us suffering into conscious awareness, and that's the transformation. It doesn't resolve the problem, but it does transform the suffering.
Yes, and it's like without a mind party involved. You know, it's like when I was getting ready to call in, of course, a little part of me is preparing, and I couldn't find any words to say what I figured out because I didn't figure anything out, or at least my mind didn't. The process changed things. So it's really, it's even hard to articulate, but it's, it gave me hope, you know, and I think about the thing of just, if I can just pull one thread, I can pull them all. You know, it's not going to be too much different. All that's really going to change is that content. So,
yeah.
So my mind feels kind of lonely.
Say that again, Susan. I didn't quite track.
I said, ego's kind of lonely. It's like it was up for parties at 3 a.m., and I'm like, oh, no, this is not happening. Mm. We're not having this conversation. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it brings us back to what you started us off with, which is once we understand what the process is, it's applicable to all content, right? It's not what but how. And so, as you said, it's possible for any content to be the portal, because the process of looking at it becomes the process of looking at conditioning or the suffering process, and in that the content gets formed. And so, ego doesn't have a leg to stand on because it's going to be exposed and won't stand up under scrutiny. In fact, it doesn't have many plays. It's a pretty consistent process. It's the same process, in fact.
That's what I'm starting to think. You know, the content changes, but it's that looking to the mind to solve the problem that it's creating is not going to work. It's just not going to, you know, it's not happening. And so I just think there's a big difference inside me now between understanding that isn't mental.
That we don't use the mental process to look at the mental process. We look at awareness. Look at conditioned mind, which is a completely different way of knowing within quotes.
And I really want to hold on to that. It certainly saves a lot of time and saves stuff. In fact, I read this book by Parker Palmer. I don't know if you know who he is. He writes a lot of kind of spiritual books, but he talked about waking up at 3 a.m. and not being able to go to sleep. And he said, the only thing you need to know is that when you wake up at 3 a.m., you're talking to a madman or a madwoman. Don't have that conversation. Do anything you can. Because it is just like the mad woman on the other end of that conversation. So anyway, I just wanted to call in and share that. And I'm grateful, and I'm trying to keep it close to my heart so that I, if any guy, doesn't forget.
Yes, and that's why we have the recorder, right?
Exactly.
Way to do that.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Ashwini. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. Ashwini, that was really helpful for me, that idea of looking to conditioned mind to solve a problem that was created by conditioned mind.
Yeah.
It's just not going to go anywhere.
We can all quote Einstein.
Say that again. I didn't quite catch that.
I said we can all quote we can all use Einstein's quote to quote our experience of that, right? That you cannot solve the problem. No problem can be solved by the mind that created it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kim calling from Vashon.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kim.
It's been a long time, and it's wonderful to have Q practice again.
Yes, and I'm sure you're going to line up for more Q practice shortly.
I am. I'm so thrilled about the year-long retreat. And I called because I had a really difficult conversation with my daughter today, and I want to get some guidance around how to kind of proceed. Is it okay if I give you a little content?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So she is at a college, and there were some people there on campus, and her college is very liberal, and these people were very conservative, and they were picketing the college. And she said to me, and this is, you know, that it made her, she hated them so much that she wanted to kill them for their beliefs and how much they hated people. So mm-hmm. I started to get into this conversation about hatred begets hatred and violence begets violence, and you know, at the same time trying to hear, you know, her pain, I guess I was trying to fix the issue. I mean, now that I'm kind of expressing it to you a little bit, I'm seeing that instead of being compassionate, I was so taken aback by her strong mm-hmm. words.
Mhm. 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 So you were taken aback by her strong words.
Yeah.
Say more.
And
mm-hmm.
yeah, and I was trying to, I kept on saying I disagree with what you're saying. I was trying to hold my own space a little bit because she wanted me to agree with her, and I said no, I really uh-huh. don't. We're going to have to agree to disagree, you know, and she would have nothing of it, and it was just, it was painful and a little frightening to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was painful and frightening. And was there more, Kim, or may I ask you a couple more questions?
Yes, you may ask more questions, yes.
So how did you practice with that?
Right. Well, I was thinking about practice the whole time that we were having the conversation. I was thinking mm-hmm. about, How can I turn this into a practice moment for myself and for her, you know, in the moment? And I'm realizing, as I'm speaking to you, probably afterwards, a two-handed recording would have helped me to practice.
Mm-hmm.
However, I
will help you now, right?
And it will help me now, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it's, I mean, so it often is not about, for us, so we always say, right, we use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. And so there's a way in which getting really, really clear for yourself why you were shocked and what that person was going through and what the pain you were feeling is really so important, because clearly, that whole situation, that circumstance had a charge for you, and that's where you got triggered. And so the real
yeah.
exploration and freedom is to see what's going on for her.
For me, yeah.
Not your
for
daughter.
Her.
Yeah.
Right?
Right,
yeah. For the authentic yeah. person who is me. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that's so difficult with your child, because there's this immediate identification of the mother, you know, of wanting to, and projection also, there was a lot of projection, like, oh my gosh, you know, how could this be coming from my child? You know, this is, you know, so that was going on too. It was really complex.
Oh, absolutely, really complex, because you watched yourself, which is where I think you're practicing, right, which is where our practice of awareness comes in, that we're in this circumstance. It's a charged circumstance. We're watching ourselves get triggered, right? And we're bringing so much attention and awareness to it, not in that we're able to not get identified, but from awareness, be aware of the process that's going on. I mean, you were really clear that you were taken aback. You were knocked off center. There was the identification with a mother. There was the identification with someone else who thought this whole thing was really, really painful. And so our practice is to resolve what's going on for us. And so just to bring that back to what in me is not acceptable, that a lack of acceptance triggers that for me. Right?
Mm. Mm. Ooh, that's very, very subtle.
exactly, because all I would project, everybody in that situation has not resolved. Your daughter, those people picketing on that college campus line, and even you and even us in that situation, it's like, all of us are being talked to by that conditioned system, and some aspect of something in us is unacceptable. And that has to be returned to acceptance for us all not to take positions against each other that results in separation.
Yes.
So what is hatred other than the absence of love? And we feel that acutely, right?
Say that one more time, something about the absence of love. What?
What is hatred other than the absence of love?
Thank you.
And so there's a way in which, I mean, what was dropping in for me is no one has to leave center, but everything can come into center to be healed. And when we leave center because something triggers us, we want to know what we need to return into acceptance so that whatever it is, doesn't trigger us off from a centered response.
Okay, so what's dropping in for me right now is like where I got pushed was that I didn't allow this into the circle of acceptance at all. I was like, nope, this can't be my daughter, this can't be her opinion. And so I totally, that is very helpful, extremely helpful.
Let me rephrase it. What happened is, whatever the reason, which is what you'll discover when you do the two-handed reporting exercise, whatever the reason, will assist you to see whatever the cause is that caused a conditioned reaction to happen. In other words, your attention flipped to something wrong, right? This should not be happening. This is not for my daughter. This can't be what she says. It sounds like I am saying it, right? My daughter, me, this circumstance. But really what's happening is that there's the ego is operating there. You got taken over. And so what you're going to do is, in working with whoever it is that's caught in that system, that feels that pain, the mom or I think there are a few different places you can explore it, to just, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's the mom or someone else. But as you go into that situation, you'll discover what is it that you care about? What is so painful? What is causing whatever conditioning can say to you about it to move into a conditioned position, right? So you did not move into something. You conditioned mind took over. And so you're just interested in exploring, okay, that happened. I got identified. And so what in there is, what is suffering there? And how does that get brought into the circle of acceptance? So you're absolutely right. You watched how you were moved out of the circle of acceptance by that conditioned process. And now you're going to discover what you can see about that and what is unacceptable that needs to be returned to acceptance.
And, you know, now when you're saying all of this, it's very interesting because what's dropping in is basically I did the same thing that she was doing. You know, like you said, hatred, you know, right?
Yes.
Exactly the same thing that she was doing with myself and with her and with the whole, with the situation, not her, with the situation.
Yes.
So it's very ironic, you know.
Ironic at all, because what happened to her happened to you, which is everybody got identified.
Right.
Ego
right.
was present. You didn't do it, right? What happens to me when I get to a place of feeling separate and projecting separation from someone else is that I get identified. So everybody got identified, right?
And everybody got identified.
We just don't need to take that personally, and we don't need to try to move every. I mean, it's what Cherry says, right? I'm intolerant of intolerant people. I'm a tolerant person because I'm intolerant of intolerant people.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And so we just, as exactly as you said, you want to laugh about it, right? Because we see how that's compassion. I see I see how I get to the same place that I judge someone else for.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's simply ego. It's not about me, but it's about this force that can generate separation and engender hate, and my job is to get back to love, and that's a process because there are some things that have happened to me, and have happened to all of us through our conditioning, that cause those places to be dark places, and so we have to bring the light to those places.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so beautiful and perfect. I'm going to go do some two-handed recordings after the show here. So
Yes, thank you. Yes, exactly so. And you know, this sounds woo-woo Californian, right, Kim? But there's a way in which when we end the suffering in ourselves, we end it for everyone.
Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't sound woo-woo at all to me. I agree.
Yeah, and that the best way to assist your daughter to see the possibility other than hatred is to make that change in you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Thank you.
And see you on the show soon.
Yes. Yasho.
Yasho.
Thanks for joining us, Kim. Ashwini, a couple things I loved about that conversation. First, the process of processing and sharing and the clarity that comes from doing that regularly and the opportunity to see our own process as we talk about it.
Yes, exactly. We all have the wisdom that we need. And we just need to have that conversation, right? We need to need to move into the processing perspective.
Yes. And the other thing I heard in that conversation is the ability to see myself act out of conditioning and not allow the self-hatred to come in and judge me for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's
really powerful.
Yeah, it is. Worst thing is to give attention to self-hate when there's a moment of awareness about what ego has done, right? That's owning something that is not us.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Ashwini, we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael and Ashwini, it's Gabriel in New Jersey.
Hi, Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. So nice to hear both of your voices. Wow, I've been doing a ton of practicing in many ways and through many avenues. And since I'm in New Jersey and I'm not in California, I wish I had center like right down the street. But I've had the opportunity to see other venues of practice. And I listen to the radio show every week. I can't do it on Tuesdays because I have a commitment. But I just want to remind all of us the incredible amount of sanity and clarity and amazing good work that we all do in this practice. It's really quite unique and special. I'm saying that from a place of having been looking at many other practices and things, and this is just really, oh God, unbelievable. I don't mean to be elitist or, I don't know, sound like we're the best, but we are amazing.
Well, we keep saying we're lucky people, right, Gabriel?
Yeah. What I wanted to talk about as I was listening to you talk with the previous caller, and just in general, what I want to talk about is one of the ways in which ego has gotten me for, I don't know, the better part of my whole life is this idea that I should be able to do this on my own. And it's not necessarily on my own, like as an individual, but that even if I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that don't value practice or don't value truth, that I should be able to muscle through that and have such an unbelievable practice that I should just basically be able to surround myself with any type of person and maybe even live with any type of person, and without, you know, any regard to the quality of maybe their attention or energy or intention, and kind of just like get through this on my own. And what's becoming more and more evident as I'm growing up a little bit is how important it is to be kind of selective about the kinds of people that I live with and hang out with, because it's very important to be doing this as a sangha, not only, you know, externally as the sangha, but also like within the home, I think. And it's just become more and more obvious to me that it's very important to be very careful as to who I allow ego to hire in my life, because ego can call a lot of shots without me even noticing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so several things that you said, right, Gabriel, that's sort of worth underlining. So the first thing you said, which is so important for all of us, is that when we're identified with ego, there's such a level of hubris in that, right? The egocentricity is the perspective from which I could do this, but I can do this by myself. I am not only am I able to do it, which is one level of identification. I have control over it, which is the second level of identification. But it's all up to me is a third level of identification, and I should be able to do it, which is the fourth level of identification. Right? It's all egocentric, in the focus of me. But what it does really, and I think this is why the Buddha left us with Bodhidharma and Sangha, is that it is exactly that. Because when we get identified with that, we can't see it. And Sangha helps us to see that identification when we aren't able to see it. A teacher helps us to see that identification when we're not able to see it. And so it's really important to surround ourselves with the mirrors that assist us to see the process that wants to isolate us with it. right?
Or with, yeah, because when I hear that, yes, and sometimes it's, so you're not alone. You're surrounded by a bunch of people or by some people, but, you know, ego doesn't seem to have a problem with one being surrounded by ego-identified people. So what I mean by that is like I used to think it was like either, oh, ego's just trying to get me to be all by myself in a little cave somewhere. But sometimes ego's trying to get me to hang out with a wrong group of people, dare I say. And that's another way of being alone in the midst of a crowd. And it's a lot, what I've noticed and what I've been looking at is like, I am allowing ego to talk me into, innocently, none of this is like, you know, condemnation worthy of myself because there's the compassion we have, but I have innocently been allowing ego to get me to be in the wrong crowds, and so I'm not alone, quote unquote, and then ego has, beyond that, made me somewhat the light that's going to be guiding these people or something. So there's the hubris again. And it's just so amazing to see. And the only reason I think why I can see it is because of the level of practice and also just a certain kind of, I don't know, there's like a certain kind of strength. I can't explain what the right word is. It takes a certain level of strength or I don't know what word to use, to be able to see one's kind of mistake or something. I don't, sin. I don't know what words to use here. Where, because before, I would not want to see that I had this arrogance to me because it was just too painful to allow that in. But now that, like, it's so clear, it's like, oh, I get it. I've been so arrogant all of my life, thinking that I'm, like, the enlightener of the world or something. And, you know,
well, Gabriel,
it's still not... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think the word you're looking for is humility, right?
Yeah.
And the humility arises from disidentifying with ego. That's simply it, right? So you're actually not arrogant. Ego is arrogant. But when we're identified with it, we can't see it because we're seeing through it, right? We're identified with something that believes that it's the enlightener of the world. But as soon as you disidentify, there's no pain. It's painful to have been identified for that long, but that's the compassion to see that it was an identification and that's not who you really are. So that the humility comes from knowing that everybody gets identified. Everybody goes up against this worthy opponent and sometimes gets taken over by it. But when we practice enough, as you said, when you practice disidentifying from it enough, we are humbled by what it's capable of doing to us, and we have the humility to see that we don't have to be egocentric and identified with it if we choose not to.
And this is why talking to you and people in the Sangha that are practicing as sincerely as we are is so helpful, because your reframe and your reflection of me was one of, there's nothing wrong with you. You're a beautiful human being. This happens to all of us. Whereas if in another space I admit that to somebody that may not be, you know, as clear around it, they may be like, oh, how could you? How dare you? And then there's the shame. So that was,
yes.
That's coming full circle to my point of how privileged we are in this Sangha to call in with admitting whatever and being reflected, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with you. I love you. Mm-hmm. You're beautiful. Mm-hmm. Good practice. Mm-hmm. And what a gift. I mean, how much of that do we get in this culture? I don't know. I'm looking around and it's not like rampant out there that people are so supportive, like in this mm-hmm. practice. So I'm going to pass because I've been rambling on, but I just wanted to say thank you, and I hope it's clear how grateful I am just by what I've shared, but I can't teary up. Just thank you, Ashwini and Sherry and Michael and all the monks and everyone. It's all the people that practice. It's just that hierarchy has disappeared of like, oh, there's this one and that one. We're all one, and it's a beautiful thing. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And, you know, Gabriel, before you sign off, there's one thing that is having disidentified, right? It, to me, we're always given the next place to look in that reflection, right? We don't have to take ownership of the what we're identified with once we've disidentified. We see that, right? And from that place of having disidentified, there is the opportunity for us to be able to see how ego operates. I mean, you mentioned, right, that it got you by telling you you had to go to it alone, and then it got you by putting you in surrounding you with people who are also ego identified. And there's a way in which we have to arrive at, even in that situation, what we're being talked into is being with ego, whether we're alone or in other circumstances, because our spiritual quest is to be able to calibrate to life regardless of circumstances, right? So how do we find, as Gandhi put it, the God in the next person you meet? It's not because we find the ego in them, but we find the divinity in ourselves.
Yes, yes. I thank you for making that great point. There's an ego thing happening here. There's like a fear around that, because I don't know, there's a human experience of having like been burned so many times by ego identified people. And so there's, I know it's important to get to that place where you're talking to, where we see God in all and are able to remain present under those very difficult circumstances. But like for me, my New Year's resolution has been to be single for the whole year of 2019. Because I just feel like there's human, like, developing, catching up to do, to be able to remain present, living with, like, a partner without getting identified. And when you said that, that whole, like, fear came up of, like, oh, no, wait. I need a little bit of time before I can have that level of practice.
Well, that's very wise, but, right? Very, very wise.
Yeah.
And to recognize where you are and where the work is, right? Just to recognize that what we need to practice with is how ego gets me in relationship or with the other that needs to be resolved, as we were talking to Kim, where whatever's going on for you needs to be resolved in you. And to know that its resolution lies in you and not with the other is the first place to start. And so to just take the time, as you are saying, to work with whatever is hurt and betrayed and disappointed and fearful in you, and return that into acceptance and unconditional love.
Yes. I'm just trying to protect the younger and, I don't know, smaller aspects of me from the pressure of, like, you have to be able to pull this off now, because that's the ego talking. The mentor is saying, take your time, sweetie. Like, there's a timing to this, and just, you know, attune to that life sort of flow, ebb and flow, and honor that. But ego is just like, ah, screw that, skip that. Just, you know, be magnificent, be enlightened. And that's just ego, and it's so nice to be so clear on that. And thank you for reflecting my wisdom again.
Yes, it takes a great deal
of
time to
wisdom.
Know where we are.
Life wisdom. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Gabriel. You take care of yourself.
You too. Very nice to hear from you and hear you and all of you. I love you all. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. Ashwini, that was a great conversation. And the first thing that comes to mind is what lucky people we all are to have this practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, somewhere where where we can look at anything without judgment. And all of our mirrors are compassionate mirrors.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing opportunity mm-hmm. for us to have this practice and the Sangha and the opportunity to be open and sharing in this way. And we have another caller here.
Great, thank you.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you, Michael and Ashwini. It's Janice from Victoria.
Hey, Janice.
Hi, Janice.
Hey. So in this present moment, I'm fine because I realize the days are getting longer. The sun is just setting on a clear, crisp day, and I'm looking at the hummingbirds just gathering the last of their stuff from the feeder. And when I was hoping to be called upon over the last few, last couple of months, I just wanted to, first of all, express my gratitude for the email class and the upcoming opportunities, like the year long, but also to mention that I'm really excited that the at-home retreat in March is going to be happening. And so that I haven't seen that for quite a while, and it's something I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so...
so much to practice with, right, Jen?
Yes.
Mm.
And I'm coming to the monastery, so the end of next week, for a week. And that it's like a beacon of light for me. And it's
mm-hmm.
also, it's under my circumstances, it's also kind of nerve-wracking because I haven't actually booked the flight the way I'm going to get there because I've been so concerned whether it's going to be possible or it's not going to be possible, and how to do it so there's ease all around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And what I hear you saying, Janice, and the way you're actually describing that situation is with so much presence, right? Because it is nerve-wracking. It is you're navigating uncertainty, but you're navigating it with presence. It's something that you're happy and looking forward to do, but you don't know whether it's possible or not, and you're taking the steps that will assist you to get there. And if you do, that would be wonderful. And if you don't, that will be wonderful.
Oh, thank you for reflecting that, because I almost said, well, to myself, can I put this off? You know, can it be the week later or whatever? But there's still going to be all sorts of specialist appointments and things. So I'm working around the best week that it's possible. And I'm also looking at the sooner I do this, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sooner I do this, it's better for me. And then and that's the self-care that I'm doing is the thing that's going to help my partner going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's so much that you're pointing to, right, Janice? One is we don't know, right? We state our intention, we make the choices for our heart, and then we have to let life make the decisions for us. And the attitude of mind that we bring to it is really what we have. So if you're in a stressful place trying to get this all done, then what you have is stress. And where you are is, yeah, it's difficult. It's challenging. There's a lot of things that are up in the air. But my job is to show up with as much cheerfulness and grace as I possibly can in order to achieve what the choice of my heart. And then to recognize, too, that this is something that is important to me. It takes care of me. It takes care of my heart. And so I really want to do it. And then, you know, we show up, practice like our hair's on fire, and then we let it all go. Because I think it's a line from the Bhagavad Gita, to quote a different tradition, where the fruits of our actions don't belong to us, right?
Okay, say more about that, please.
Oh, that just that everything, there's an attitude of mind that what you do is you do as an act of worship almost.
Mm.
And whether or not mm-hmm. you get the rewards of your actions are not up to you.
Right. Got it. Yeah.
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 And then, and there's so many levels of this, I would project, right? Because there's the content level of it, and then there's the process level of it. There's, you're fine in the grand scheme of things, and then there's a human being here who needs support in what she has to do in order to make this happen. There's a mm-hmm. human being who is, you know, anticipating something, looking forward to something, could get disappointed with something, and she gets to be held in unconditional love and acceptance and be supported through whatever it is that she's having an experience of while she knows that everything is okay,
mm-hmm.
however it turns out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm noticing is that I can put everything aside for whatever I'm doing. For example, I can put it aside when I walk out in the morning to go for a stroll and to be somewhere, and I can put it just in my movements of the days of what I'm doing, and then allow the space. Something will pop up, like there was an idea today about, oh, this is how it could happen to get there with some ease. It never occurred to me. And
mm-hmm.
I've made some communication about that. And I can't even access my email right now because my email is full. And I felt, well, that's like me, you know. I just feel kind of too full sometimes, and I have to just put it all down, come back
mm-hmm.
to what's here. And when I come
mm-hmm.
back
yes.
to what's here, I notice then I've been here. It's like every morning, every afternoon, there's some, it's just some situation arise when I'm out in the world. Like it was listening to somebody who's working at a school as a crossing guard who just needed to say something, but she saw me as a friendly face that comes every day and says hello when I go by. And I was there to hear somebody's story and be a support just by listening. And I thought, that's
mm-hmm.
all those skills from reflective listening over all those
mm-hmm.
years. And
mm-hmm.
and then another time where I just sort of leapt into action over something, and I thought, if I was stuck in my head about really how nerve-wracking this is, I'm just not available to life at all.
Yes, and I think that's exactly what you're describing, right? That as you practice, what you've noticed is there's a way in which you know where to put your attention so that life can have access to you. And you practice that, right? Because
right.
there's a way in which you can tell the cup is full, and so the attention has to be somewhere else, to empty the cup so that there's an availability for life to drop in and insight. You trust that process because it's your experience that that's what happens when you redirect attention. And so you live your life like that, right?
Right.
Beautiful process.
Oh, thank you for just summarizing that and allowing me to see it through your words of
mm.
reflection.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, it's an ever expanding faith.
Yes, yes, that's right. So
yeah, and what you said about the yeah, thank you, Janice. We hope to see you soon.
Were you going to say something else?
Well, just that there's a way also that when we get out of the way, right, when the me is not allowed to operate, we're so mm-hmm. available not just to receive life, which helps us, but we are those instruments through which life can assist other people. right? Mm-hmm. They were talking about the guard at the crossing.
Mm-hmm.
And there, life, you were available for life to speak through you in order to reflect her. So it works in so many ways when we redirect the attention and follow that intuition to get out of the way so life can have access to us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, one of the words she said is, I just knew you were a safe person to talk to. And I thought, I think that's what practice does. It helps. Just being present makes us safe for ourselves and for others.
Yes, because there's no ego there, right? That's the safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you. See you soon.
Thank you. See you soon, Janice. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. Ashwini, we're about 4 minutes to the hour here. Do you want to wrap
it
up?
Well, give it a shot.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. It's Jen in Rhinebeck.
Hey, Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Hi. Well, I'm not speedy. But I'll do my best. What I've been looking at that I had wanted to talk about was there's some situations going on with my family, with my parents, and I have a brother who is a year younger than me that lives with them, and my parents are starting to show some real signs of compromised mental health, and it feels to me like they need some help, and I've been trying to support my brother in that process, but he's not doing it the way I would do it, is the message I'm hearing. Because I've kind of distanced myself from my family over the years, just, part of my own healing process or whatever, I'm not in the minutia of their day-to-day life, so what's happening now is that I can't quite see how I can be useful. And so when I can't see how the larger karmic pattern that I'm seeing is that when I can't see the path, I don't take any action at all. So I just kind of shut down. I get paralyzed and I shut down. So it's like, I don't know what to do. And because I don't know how it'll turn out. So I'm just not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're seeing that, right? Which is the most important thing. That if you don't know what... Because, Jen, as we've been looking at it, if the I... the underlying real sort of belief is it's up to you. You have to be able to see in order to be able to do. And the wisdom in seeing that and letting go of it is that there's a way in which... You surrender the karma, and therefore you surrender to the only thing that knows and does.
Say that again. Sorry, surrender to the only thing.
Life is the only thing that knows, and the life is the only thing that does. But that ability to rest in that is taken away from you because the attention is on the I that believes that it should see, and if it can't see, it can't do. So it's actually very useful to surrender that, because when you do, then what can actually do and what can actually see and what can actually make make anything happen has a chance to act through you, right? And you are available to it.
Yes. Yes, because sometimes I'll get it'll seem to just drop in like, oh, I should give them a call. And it's like, oh, no, I can't give them a call right now. You know, like somehow that gets, shut down. And it's like, okay, right, I can't give them a call because I don't know what I'm going to say. And, you know, it's getting difficult to have conversations with both my parents in just a capacity. Like, they're, you know, they don't, not having much of a capacity to have an actual conversation. So it's like, okay, well, there's no point in calling then. And then I'm back here like, wait a minute, but I can just feel the separation in the whole process, you know, that I'm separating even further.
Yes, which is a very, again, an intuitive place to, because what life is really saying, right? The only thing we can always be is unconditional love. So we don't have to do, we don't have to say. When it arises for you to call, you could sort of reframe that to say, all that's arising here is connection, right? I'm feeling the love, and all I've got to do is show that I'm there. I don't have to solve this problem. I don't have to assist. I don't have to indulge the ego that feels that somehow love equals doing.
And that I'm responsible somehow.
Yes. And so the to honor what's arising for you is just simply that you love, period, right? You love, and you want to show your love. And it could simply be call and listen to whatever it is that is going on. You don't have to offer a solution. You don't have to offer a fix. You could simply reflect. You could just signal by your presence how much you love them. What could be more precious than that?
Right. Even if I don't have, even if nothing changes about their circumstance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
It goes back to what we were talking with Susan about. What conditioning wants us to focus on is the content, right? Here's a situation, a problem to be solved. I can't see how to solve it. And so there's no need for me to be involved because performance or action is equivalent to love. It's all in that in that conditioned system. But what intuitively you're sensing is, or what life is telling you is, there's nothing for you to do. You can't do anything because you can't see what's going on in their lives. And so what you do is show up with your love. Take the you out of the situation and let love be there.
That's great. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I interviewed someone last week for work, and he's a Zen teacher, and he was talking about how the only thing love knows how to do is love.
Yes.
So
it doesn't even love someone. It loves.
Right. It just loves. And so no matter what you encounter with it, if you're with love, then that's how you encounter it. Love. Like, oh, right. Okay, great. I can use that here too. Okay, good. All right. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen. Talk to you
soon. All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jen. And Ashwini, it's great that there's always one answer to every situation. And that's
there is indeed unconditional love.
Yes. So thank you so much for being here tonight. It was a great show and fabulous. And next Monday is our new year-long retreat.
Yes, we'll have another radio show going.
Another radio show. What abundance.
What abundance, indeed.
All right. Go happy, Ashwini.
Go happy. Take care. And thank you, Michael, as always.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.